Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on Radio Catskill. I'm your host for this Monday evening, Patricio Robayo. Hope everyone's doing well. In the second half of the show, we'll check in with New York Focus to learn more about the closure of two prisons this November, including Sullivan Correctional Facility in our area, and discuss the effects this has for the state and Sullivan County. First, over the weekend, President Joe Biden announced that he would not be seeking the Democratic nomination. This decision follows increasing pressure from lawmakers, donors, activists, and voters within his own party, who expressed concerns about his ability to defeat Republican Donald Trump in the upcoming election. Tim Bruno spoke with Ann Hart, the chair for the Democratic Party in Sullivan County, and Greg Goldstein, the chair for the Republican Party for Sullivan County, to get their reactions to this news and its potential impact on the election. Here's Ann Hart.
Joe Biden is a true American hero. He is a statesman. I know it was a difficult decision for him, but he really put what's best for the country ahead of his own ambition and agenda. And I thank him for a lifetime of service. We often don't see public servants like Joe Biden, and he really has shown us what public service means and should be. And every person in office should take heed, take note, and follow his example.
He immediately endorsed Kamala Harris to replace him. Do you back her?
I think she'll be a great candidate. I think she'll be a great president. Our delegation, I believe, will be meeting very shortly to talk about coalescing around her. I'm assuming because the governor and the state chair has already endorsed her. I feel that we will, and I feel that she, as vice president, is the right person for the job. She's been involved in the administration all the way going through, and she's been a real voice for women, for minorities, and for everyone. And I think we're in good hands with her.
Let's talk about that process. You are a delegate for President Biden, but things have changed now. How does that work process-wise?
I'm not sure, considering that this is very unprecedented. It's never happened before, and I haven't looked at the Rules Committee meeting that was broadcast the other day. I haven't had a chance. I've been working, but I'm sure that there will be a process that will follow not only our own party rules, but any other legal rules that apply to this process. I'm not sure what it is, but I know that it will go forward and we will emerge united and enthused for our candidates.
There was a lot of hand-wringing after the debate over the last 3 weeks amongst Democrats. Now that the president has endorsed Kamala Harris to replace him, there's a reporting that $50 million in donations, grassroots donations, just coming in the last 24 hours, I think, is the single biggest day in donations for Democrats. Does that show to you that there's enthusiasm there for Vice President Kamala Harris?
It absolutely shows enthusiasm, and it shows, you know, an energy. It shows that people have just since the debate probably been waiting and watching and wondering what will happen. But at the end of the day, there's a clear choice here, and that choice cannot be Donald Trump returning to the White House and working against all of the freedoms that so many people have worked for so many years to protect. So the choice is clear. A friend just shared on map that ActBlue put out that showed where the small donations are coming from and that have been coming from. And you'd be surprised at some of the states, including Florida, where this money is pouring in to support Democrats all across the nation. It's an interesting little sort of picture of where these small donations are coming from.
How do you think this changes the race locally and statewide as well?
I think that our candidates, our congressional candidate, is staying the course. He's got his positions on things. We support them, and he will continue to campaign outside of that. Josh Riley, sorry. And he will move forward with the strong campaign that he has. His positions on the issues don't change, and we'll continue to support him. I think the same goes for Michelle Frazier for State Senate and Paula Kaye for Assembly. Their campaigns are focused on the needs of the people in the 51st Senate District and the 101st Assembly District, and they will continue to press their case about why they're the best candidates to serve us in Albany.
You heard the state GOP chair tying Vice President Harris to the Biden policies nationally. The Trump campaigns have been doing that as well. Representative Mark Molinaro, who's up for re-election, and Josh Riley is opposing him in the 19th, has also been saying that. So do you think that she's able to overcome that, painting of being the same types of policies, that same line of attack?
The record of the Biden-Harris administration has been remarkable, from bringing us out of COVID, steering us through the uncertainty of the economic disaster that COVID brought, and through Infrastructure Act, for lowering prices for prescription drugs, lowering the insulin price. It's a really excellent record to run on. This past administration, this current administration, has done nothing but good for the people of America and the people of New York State. The CHIPS and Science Act has brought jobs to New York State. We've got infrastructure projects that we never had under the Trump administration. It's not a bad record to run on, frankly. It's one that everyone should be proud of. Democrats have delivered for the people.
Do you have any concerns about the time frame here? It's 106 days, 105 days till the general. Are you concerned about any of that?
We'll pull it together. We'll pull it together. I think that the American people are starved for positive results. They're tired of hate. They're tired of negativity, and they want progress for everybody. So I'm confident that we can do the job. It might be a little harder than we would have liked, but that's okay. We're used to that.
Before I let you go, is your head spinning?
Yeah, it has been. But I'll just say this. Ever since I became chair, the political landscape has been topsy-turvy ever since, from, moving congressional lines 2 years ago to this year. It's been a PhD in chaos, and this is just one more class toward that PhD in chaos. But we prevail, we pivot, we're strong, we'll prevail.
Ann Hart is chair of the Sullivan County Democratic Committee and also a delegate for President Biden for now. And she's joining us now live. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch as we go through this topsy-turvy election.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
He is Greg Goldstein, chair of the Republican Party for Sullivan County, and his reaction to President Biden stepping down from the nomination.
Well, I think he did the right thing for himself and for the country. Obviously, after the last debate, he showed that he didn't have the spark that he's had over the years. And I think he did the right thing as far as his own well-being also and for the country.
He immediately endorsed Kamala Harris as the potential replacement for him. What is your reaction to that?
My reaction is that continues the same. Not the best policies as far as she's the border czar, has not been to the border. We've had millions of illegal immigrants come into our country. Inflation is high. People are having a hard time affording to buy groceries. So I don't think this makes a big difference as far as what we're going to be seeing if she would be the successful candidate for president.
How does this change the race locally and statewide?
I don't think it affects anything locally or statewide at all. As far as I think the state, we have issues. Obviously, we have an issue that the governor is closing our prison in Woodburn without any notification. A lot of jobs, a lot of money that comes in the county because of that prison. So I don't think, in my opinion, it's going to be a good year for the Democrats statewide or on the national level.
Republicans wrapped up seemingly successful convention showing some unity last week. Now it seems as if this announcement yesterday and Vice President Kamala Harris being the potential replacement for President Biden has created some enthusiasm on the Democratic side, raising about $50 million over the last 24 hours. Do you see the enthusiasm gap closing a little bit for Democrats here?
Well, I think the enthusiasm is a lot better than it has been. Obviously, the Republicans had a very successful convention, first time in a while. It was great. So I think that raising that money is, you know, that doesn't surprise me. That money was not going to flow as long as Biden stayed the candidate. So he was pressured by a lot of people to give it up. And I think it's going to be a fun next 3 months.
Fun is a way of putting it. Do you think Donald Trump is beatable?
Of course he is. Anybody's beatable. I just think that if they have a debate, he'll show his strengths. I think he's sort of humble now after this assassination attempt. And I think that he will be the successful candidate. Like I said, it's going to be a joyful next 3 months.
Why do you call it joyful?
Well, I'm just saying there's going to be a lot of stuff thrown, a lot of stuff said on both sides. And I just think it's going to be, the Democrats want to hold the White House. Republicans want to gain it back. I think the Senate and the Congress could go red, could go to the Republicans. So you can't change what's happened over the past 3.5 years as far as energy. There's a lot of things that have to come back home and start back here in the United States.
It sounds like you might be enthusiastic about it. It does change the calculus a little bit. The campaign, the Trump campaign, has always thought that Biden would be the candidate. Now it's switched a bit. It's still the vice president with that administration. But do you think that we can all move forward civilly as we go through this? It's been chaotic so far.
I hope so. I think it's so important that we have fruitful talks about what the issues are. I'm hoping that in our assembly race in Sullivan County, that'll be the same thing, and I believe it will. I really think it can, if both sides want to do it that way. But unfortunately, with social media and things being thrown out, it's very, very difficult to do that now.
That's Greg Goldstein. He's the chair of the Sullivan County Republican Committee. Greg, thanks for joining us this morning. And okay. I'm sure we'll be in touch as we go through all the fun.
I look forward to it. And thanks for thinking of me.
Thank you, Tim Bruno, for that. You can hear Radio Chatsco Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. We'll be right back. We'll talk to New York Focus about the two prisons that are closing in New York State. And one of them is in Sullivan County. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
On the next Radio Lab,
you see these wasps?
Editor Alex Neeson slogs through dusty archives and swampy cemeteries.
Ooh, I'm stepping in mud.
To uncover,
where are you?
The dark history behind her name.
This is where it starts.
And figure out if your name is something you have to move past, or...
Wait! What?
If it's your best way of moving forward.
You know, I'm right here. I'm moving forward.
That's on the next Radio Lab. Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day, and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. I'm your host for this Monday evening, Patricio Robayo. New York Focus is an independent newsroom reporting on how power and politics in New York impact people's lives and how the state really works. Radio Catskills partners with New York Focus to regularly bring you their in-depth journalism. And this week, New York's Department of Corrections and Community Supervision will close two of the state's maximum security prisons, Great Meadow Correctional Facility in Washington County and Sullivan Correctional Facility right here in Sullivan County, by November 6th. This decision is part of a plan to include in the state budget legislation, allowing the executive to close up five state correctional facilities within the fiscal year. And here to tell us more is Chris Giraldi from New York Focus. Chris, welcome to the program. Let's first discuss what are some of the main reasons for closing Great Meadow and Sullivan Correctional Facility.
Sure, yeah. The announced closures of those two prisons is part of a greater plan that was put into motion this spring in the New York State budget. One of the little provisions in the budget allowed the governor and the state to very quickly close up to five state prisons within the year, within the fiscal year. And that's actually part of a much longer term, much broader effort to call what the Department of Corrections and Community Revision is called right-sizing. Since 1999, actually, the New York State prison population has more than cut in half. The era of mass incarceration saw a lot of people in state prisons in the 80s and 90s. And with law changes and sentencing changes, the prison population just keeps going down. It's about 33,000 right now, and it was more than double that a decade or two and a half decades ago. So under Andrew Cuomo, the state closed 22 prisons. Then in 2022, Governor Kathy Hochul closed a handful more. And so this is just a part of that. It is trying to have the necessary amount of facilities for the prison population that we have.
And so, you know, one of the reasons why the incarcerated population has gone down is this like sort of a direct effect of bail reform and those efforts that New York State has made?
Not so much bail reform, although bail reform has had a little bit of an effect on the incarcerated population. It has driven it down a little bit. This is actually a phenomenon that's happening across the country. There were really aggressive, tough on crime laws in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and that saw a huge spike in the prison population nationwide, state facilities and federal facilities. And there's been a rethinking on those policies. And so we've seen a lot of those laws rescinded. We've seen a lot of new harsh sentencing sentencing laws revamped. A lot of those harsh sentencing laws from specifically the 90s have been redone. And yeah, this is actually like a nationwide phenomenon. We're seeing decarceration throughout the country. It should be worth noting the U.S. still, and New York State incarcerate more people per capita than most countries in the world. But the severity of that has been decreasing nationwide.
And in your headline, you say that New York is to close one of the most notorious prisons, and Great Meadow has been described as one of the worst prisons in the state. Can you describe some of the issues they've had with staff beatings and sort of medical neglect at Great Meadow?
Yeah. So this comes with the caveat that it's incredibly difficult to figure out what is happening inside prisons at any given time. But a few of my colleagues, specifically my colleague Vicky Law, who's an amazing prison journalist who's been reporting on New York for years, did a piece a couple years ago on Great Meadow, where a lot of incarcerated people told her that violence is pretty much the norm. Both fight between incarcerated people and, aggressive officers using violence as a form of discipline. There have been widespread complaints about that for a long time at Great Meadow. There's also a very high suicide rate in Great Meadow. It's gone down just in a couple years, but at the time that article was reported, the one that I was referencing, it was one of the highest among prison in the state. And then incarcerated people, this is a complaint throughout the prison system, but especially at Great Meadow, have long complained that when they have medical issues, it's very difficult to get staff to take them to a doctor and very difficult to get the care that they need to treat the medical condition.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on your article in New York Focus, there's a great graphic there that shows the map of New York State and shows the sort of highlight all the populations in each of the state prisons. And so the plan is right now is for those incarcerated to be spread out throughout the state, or in particular one facility that we'll go to. Do you know that much?
We don't know a whole lot, about where the incarcerated people will be sent. There's a big sort of a cluster of prisons in both the Great Meadow and the Sullivan Correctional Facility areas. Now, given not all those are of the same security type, Sullivan and Great Meadow are both maximum security prisons for men. So I assume that docs will put them in maximum security prisons for men that are close and have beds available. But yeah, it's TBD. In terms of staff, though, docs has said that for both corrections officers and civilian staff, it will offer jobs and transfers to everyone that works in both of these prisons. And assumedly, those will be location-based. Yeah, because there are a lot of facilities around both of those.
Yeah, and here locally, we had some reaction from, let's say, the Fulton supervisor, Mike Vince-Mullen, and Sullivan County's legislature chair, Nadia Reich. Talked about that, about the effects that will have to the local economy. And also, not only that, the inconvenience, if you will, about the move, the potential move some of these workers would have to do. These, some of them are union workers. And Nadia Rice talked about her experience when her husband, who had a state prison closed, and he had to, they had to deal with the hardship of associated with these closures. She says, "I feel the pain and frustration of every displaced employee in a very personal way, and I'll stand by them as this process." So what do you think this effect will have on the local community and not only that, the local economy of when you have a number of families who might potentially move out of county?
Sure. Yeah, I feel for those workers. My dad actually was a corrections officer for 20 years at a county jail, and it was a good, stable job. And a lot of the friends in the community where I grew up worked that same job. So I totally know exactly what they're talking about. It's tough to say what the actual effect. I am not an economist. I'm not totally in the know about exactly how embedded the prison, these prisons are within the local economy. But I feel it will have a pretty big impact. We see this across the state, especially in rural areas, where the state and county planners build their economies around jails and or prisons specifically. And I talked to a lot of experts on this issue, and just taking a step back, that's a pretty, it seems a bit short-sighted to have your entire economy, hinge on a high incarceration rate. Obviously, that's not the workers' problem. That's not, they did nothing to do that. They're just falling prey to what seem to be very, local economies that are centered on, on this issue.
Right. In your article, you have a quote from the New York State Correctional Officers Police Pavilion Association, the union, and they said that New York State needs to take a bold, creative action to fix the staffing issue, and calling that this move is a Band-Aid on an issue. Has New York has stated a plan yet, or have you heard of anything, what they're going to do with the current, the ones are remaining open, and how they're going to address the concerns with fixing staffing problems and improving the healthcare in the remaining prisons?
For sure. Yeah. So there are two things going on here, actually. And there are two separate issues. One, the statement you mentioned from NYSCOBA, the Corrections Officers Union, I take with some skepticism, because New York State, in terms of corrections officers, security staff, is tied for the most richly staffed prison system in the entire country. At Great Meadow, for example, there are more corrections officers assigned to that prison than there are incarcerated people there. Now, there can be staffing issues in certain prisons when it comes to corrections officers, just because there are so many prisons, you have to figure out where to assign people and where to send them. So there could be some prisons that are overstaffed and some that are understaffed. And according to the governor and the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision, this whole plan to, quote unquote, right size to close some prisons is an effort to address that, to more evenly distribute the number of staff at prisons. In terms of corrections officers, that's one thing. In terms of support staff, though, and that's health staff, that staff who put on prison programming, that social workers, it's an entirely different issue. There's a huge shortage of support staff throughout the state, which is, I surmise, a huge reason why incarcerated people have a tough time getting in to see a doctor or getting any sort of medical care. Just for context, Sullivan Correctional Facility specifically, which is one of the ones that are closing, as of January of last year, reported staffing vacancies in health services at 56%. So over half of their health jobs were unfilled. And that's actually a huge reason that docs and, hopefully are pointing to the prison closures. It's not just not having too many facilities running at once. It's really being able to consolidate their support staff and put them where they're needed to, yeah, get the programming and the health services and the social services in all these facilities running like they should be.
Right. I think that's a really great point to make, because a lot of the talk has been about the correctional officers, stuff like that. But you make the point that it's really more the support and health staff that are sparse in these facilities.
Absolutely. And I should mention, whenever I talk to incarcerated people, they have nothing but, with some exceptions, have often just really wonderful things to say about their support staff. And they really rely on especially programming and social services just to, well, one, just to get through their prison time, which is extremely tough, but also prepare them for the outside. Those kind of programings are incredibly important to ensure that people who are released, a majority of people who go to prison will be released, to make sure that they have the skills and sort of the mental health support and all that they need to get out and find a job and find housing and not end up back in prison again.
Yeah, I've done stories in the past. I've been to a self-correctional facility for graduations during the Hudson Link program there that really help folks get their associates and also bachelor's degree. And I think we've both spoke to another incarcerated person there looking to expand writing programs and things like that to help in the enrichment there, to get to help folks who, once they get out of the prison system, to help them reestablish themselves in society with jobs and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually went, a similar Hudson Link ceremony at Bing Prison back in April. Yeah. Very much the same case. All the incarcerated people spoke very highly of it and really tried to emphasize the importance of programming, which, to document credit, especially the new commissioner, Dan Marticello, he's really emphasized expanding programming. There are all sorts of problems at docs, but that seems to be one way in which it seems to be heading in a better direction.
In the article, it mentioned that there might be more state prisons closing throughout the year. Have you heard any rumblings yet of which those might be?
I haven't, actually, and I've been asking around. Honestly, I would imagine that people who, corrections officers and people at docs would be more up on the rumors than I am. But so the legislation that passed in the state budget allows for up to 5 closures between April and next April. And these are 2. And in docs' statement, it said that it's going to continue evaluating specifically staffing levels to see whether more closures are necessary. Yeah, so there could be anywhere between 0 and 3 closures to come in the next little less than a year.
Wow. So, Chris, as always, great reporting from New York Focus. Chris, before we go, is there anything else I have not touched on you want folks to know about?
I don't think so. I think we hit all the points.
All right, awesome. Well, talking to Chris Giraldi from New York Focus, letting us know about the updates on the 2 prisons closing, the Great Meadow and also Sullivan Correctional Facility. You can find this article on their website, New York Focus, and also on our website, wjffradio.org. Chris, again, thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure.
And that does it for the local edition. Thank you for joining me on this Monday evening. If you ever miss a show, guess what? We have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Search for WJFF, the local edition. Subscribe, share it, and tell your friends. Find us on social media. We're at WJFF Radio Catskill. Visit our website, WJFFradio.org, for all the interviews that are featured on Radio Catskill and the local edition. You've been listening to Local Edition. I've been your host, Patricio Rubio. Have a good night, everyone, and have a good night, Lucy. This is Radio Catskill, your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Every weekday morning at 9, NewsHour from the BBC brings you the most important international news stories. NewsHour helps you understand a complex world. Stay informed with NewsHour from the BBC, weekday mornings at 9 on Radio Catskill.